Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. How are you doing on this fine day, Pete?
I'm good. I'm enjoying the fact that, obviously, we are recording remotely because you are in Japan and I can't get to Japan, god damn it. And we're using a piece of software that allows us to write little notes in the bottom of the screen. And I always forget to look at what Chris has written. And Chris has written in the last 3 minutes, "Are you there? Sure." And then, "I'm just running to do my hair." Have you just done your hair just for this podcast, Chris?
I like to be good looking for this podcast. I like to be well groomed. I like to be prepared, even though you can't see me and nobody can see me. I still like to feel the part. I like to be the part. I think it's you doing YouTube, right, for 8 years or whatever, you feel like you need to make some sort of effort. Although that being said, apparently I don't because I eat too much cheesecake, Pete. But I think I look all right on YouTube. I think I'm all right. So I need to do the same for the podcast. So,
damn right. Well, I mean, you started this record just eating a Biscoff biscuit, which was rather upsetting. Two little coffee biscuits.
Oh, yes, listeners around the world don't get to hear me crunching on biscuits. I do that just before we hit record. I get all my dinner out of the way before we get this podcast on the road. But how you been though, Pete? What's going on over there? Have you been good the last week?
I've had bad tummy over the weekend, so I didn't get to go and see some friends because the thing about me is, Chris, I just eat too much crap. If anybody else can help me, I bought some import boxes of hot tamales this week, and I ate three boxes basically of kind of cinema sized hot tamales, and it gave me pretty bad stomach cramps the rest of the week. Now, you know, when you get to my age, Chris, if you've got stomach cramps for more than a couple of days, it starts to worry you a little bit. So I shall be, you know, seeing how it goes this week, see if the hot tamales have ruined my constitution, and I will be seeking legal damages from the hot tamales company, whoever they might be.
Oh dear. I'll cancel the shipment of Kit Kats for your early Christmas present, to be honest.
They're all right. They can come.
I've just been reading, actually, that bloody Kit Kats, right, they're getting smaller, 17% smaller this year, because apparently, according to Nestle, it's in response to customer feedback. I don't know if that's outside Japan. Certainly in Japan it's happening. And why would they do that? From 11.6 grams to 9.9 grams, that's not necessary, but at the same price. It reminds me of Cadbury's, good old Cadbury's chocolate, right? British, wonderful British chocolate, gets bought by Evil Craft CEO Irene Rosenfeld back in like 10 years ago, and she's like, "Oh, we're not going to change the recipe. We're not going to close any factories." 10 minutes later, the chocolate bar's 14% smaller. The factories are all closed. Bastards. Anyway, I get annoyed when confectionery gets
shot. I'm excited the fact that you know all of the figures and all of the names and stuff like that. But with Kit Kat, has anybody ever given feedback that they want less chocolate? I don't buy that feedback I don't buy that feedback at all. Rubbish. Nonsense.
It doesn't make sense, does it? Imagine sitting in a like a room, like, do you want Kit Kats to be the same price but smaller? Who's going to go, yeah, that's a great idea?
No.
Lies. Absolute lies,
Nestle.
Who did you
ask, the Nestle CEO?
Absolute bastard. Anyway, enough of that, ranting over confectionery. But it is annoying, right, going back to the UK, thinking, oh, you know, I'll get some Cadbury's chocolate, my favourite chocolate bar. Oh, it's smaller. Oh, the edges are round now. Oh, the flavour's different. Why has this happened? That's the worst thing about living in Japan. You come back and your favourite chocolate, your favourite confectionery is incrementally shitter. And that really annoys me.
Get yourself a Kronky. I love a Kronky.
Kronky. need to export Kronky to the UK. Mm. It's the confectionery we need, chocolate biscuits. But it's been a good week for me. I released a new video for the first time in a billion years. Obviously, because I've been away doing the whole Journey Across Japan, Escape to Fuji thing, I have not had time to upload any videos, but I did upload a video, and it's a kind of a Q&A video. But the opening, the opening is basically me walking across Shibuya Crossing, right? Just pretending to be a British TV presenter, or in fact, any foreign TV presenter, because every single TV show about Japan, except one that I've seen in recent times, starts with the presenter walking over Shibuya Crossing going, Tokyo, Japan, 36 million people, Tokyo, Japan. Oh, it's so weird. Tokyo, Japan. Oh, it's really shiny. And that is the opening to every TV show ever. And it drove me to the point of insanity. So I've gone and restaged it myself. Am I exaggerating though, Pete? Do you think TV shows do start that way? Or is it me being weird?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much every show going is the vapors turning Japanese, jump cut to Shibuya Crossing with a man, usually a man, doing a piece to camera while spinning around, jump cut to sumo wrestler, and then we're out. That's pretty much the opener of every single Japan thing. Yeah, there's very few good ones, I would say.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember watching James May of Top Gear fame. And he seems to be relatively a well-researched series. It started with him in Hokkaido. I like that. It's just him on a beach doing nothing. And even though there wasn't a whole lot going on, I still thought, that's original, that's refreshing. And you want to see that with a TV show in Japan, that go and do their research. I like to think that they did watch Dearborn Japan channel for some of their research, because they did go to some of the places. Like, they went to Yamagata, which I was really delighted about, because I don't think any TV show about Japan ever has come to Yamagata. So that was that made me very happy indeed. But who knows? Maybe they watched our videos, Pete. Maybe they watched us wandering around. Maybe they watched your channel, Pete, buying rice cookers.
Look,
dare to dream.
Maybe James May came back. Maybe that's what he was wanting to do, because obviously he's a man obsessed with tech and engineering. Maybe he wanted to come back with those high pressure rice cookers, but just realised that the TV company wouldn't fund that, so just decided to do a TV show about something else.
Hopefully, yeah. Imagine bringing back a bloody rice cooker for Jeremy Clarkson. Wonder how he'd enjoy that.
The hamster probably hurt himself with it. It's a blow up.
Oh, God, that'll be the next one. Richard Hammond in Japan. To be fair, I did see a good episode of Richard Hammond doing a show about bullet trains, where he got to go behind the scenes on bullet trains and whatnot and do engineering. Seems they've all been over. The whole Top Gear team, the original Top Gear team, Top Gear now, it's thoroughly unwatchable as far as I'm concerned. But the original crew, they've been over here in many ways and shapes and forms over the years. They seem to love Japan.
I do like, Chris, that you are a 40-year-old Audi driver in disguise. that's what you are. It's just, you are just a man who is settling into middle age with very little kind of resistance, I would say, in many ways. Big fan of Top Gear.
What have I become? I think it's spending too much time with Ryotaro, because Ryotaro is always, he loves Top Gear so much. Every time I see him, he's like, whoa, it's like Top Gear, isn't it? He wants everything we do to be like Top Gear. So it's rubbed off on me. But yeah, I miss the days of Top Gear. Anyway, we haven't come here to discuss the wonderful days of Top Gear before Jeremy Clarkson punched someone in the face over some steak. We've come to hear the story of the week, and it comes this week from Danny from Puerto Rico. He says, hello, almighty Chris and Grand Lord Pete. Huge fan of both the videos and the podcast. I watched your video on tips to learn Japanese that I started to use, and I started to use the app HelloTalk and meet some nice people willing to learn English and Japanese. For those of you who don't know, HelloTalk is basically an app where you can practice your language you're learning with a stranger, right? Have you ever used it, Pete? HelloTalk.
No, I haven't actually. It's just kind of like fortifying your Japanese learning with someone who actually speaks. Are they learning English at the same time then? Are they kind of...
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like they get to practice English, you get to practice Japanese. Yeah. But you can do it with any language.
Nice.
And people tend to use it. People always message me saying they've met a stranger on HelloTalk and hooked up with them. And they message me because I shouted it out once in a video like 5 or 6 years ago. So I get a lot of thank yous. And this is where the story's heading, it seems. He continues, so I met one woman from Osaka on there, and she was very friendly all the time. And after we spoke for 6 months, I went to Japan and actually met with her in a bar in Shinjuku. Long story short, we shared drinks and she eventually told me, Daisuke, I love you, to which my buzzed self just brushed it off due to the all to the Sapporo beer we'd been drinking. She then started crying. God, and I walked her to a hotel, which made her personality suddenly shift as she whispered deviant words in my ear. I'm married and have two kids, but I don't care because I want you. I want you, Danny. And she tried dragging me into the hotel and I escaped using my Puerto Rican survival instinct and ran off. She's the third married woman who's hit on me, but she was obviously not just mad, but also hyper-aggressive with her approach. What makes this hilarious is that she then wanted me to model for her glasses brand, which let me know that she, in fact, had lost her mind. Keep up the great work. Stay safe. Much love. Danny from Puerto Rico. What do you make of that, Pete? It's all a bit bizarre.
She sounds like she should have some kind of prominence on the HelloTalk website. She sounds like very into the whole experience, quite frankly. It's not that kind of site, my dear. Yeah, incredible. I like the idea of having Puerto Rican survival instincts. That's something I hope to acquire in my JRPG journey through life.
It's just what a story, though. Like the way kind of things rapidly spiraled out of control. I love you. Then she's crying. Then she's like, I'm married, but coming anyway. And three times, no less, Danny. Three times. We'd like to hear about the other two encounters. But this is not uncommon. I've had a lot of people who have said that they've met people on HelloTalk. I think I've had someone who got married after meeting somebody there. So do check it out.
Wow.
We should get some sort of sponsorship from them, really. But HelloTalk, yeah, check it out. It's an all right app. I used it back when I shouted it out like 5 or 6 years ago. I did use it for a little bit. And what happens is you just end up speaking to someone really intensely for like a day. You know, you talk for like 10 hours straight and then you never speak to them again. And that was my experience with HelloTalk. And I learned nothing. But it's kind of fun, isn't it? Remember the old chat room days of the early internet where you just meet a stranger and chat for hours? Remember that?
Age, sex, location. Age, sex, location. Are you down? There was an advert that that the government in the UK used in the last week where they took a picture of a ballet dancer from like, you know, an image stock footage site. And they basically took used that picture and basically said to basically getting people to retrain from their arty jobs into slightly more functional ones, let's say. They basically said, you know, this dancer's, you know, Sarah's new job could be in cyber. She just doesn't know it yet. And the word cyber, they've used cyber because it sounds sexy and futuristic, except it doesn't. It sounded sexy and futuristic in the 80s. Now, the word cyber just always reminds me of those chat rooms back in the day. Anyone want a cyber, meaning cyber sex? I am so old, Chris.
You're very old.
Horrific. But yeah, usually back in the day, most of my chat room experiences were all text-based. So that was my late 90s, early noughties experience. That and the online guitar archive. If I wasn't in chat rooms, I was learning guitar via the Manic Street Preachers online guitar archive that they had online.
Well, why don't you get on HelloTalk and relive the magic of chat rooms and meeting strangers and guitars?
Are we cybering? Do you dice me?
Oh, God. Dear. Good old HelloTalk. Connecting people.
It's true, though, because it's nice to sort of like, you can read all the books in the world, but fundamentally, nothing really sticks until you're actually talking to someone and having a conversation about, you know, the weather and stuff like that. It's interesting. And also pronunciation is so specific, certainly in different parts of Japan and certainly in parts of everywhere. You know, getting the right pronunciation is really important.
Yeah, I mean, Japan's riddled with dialects. There's so many different dialects, and To be honest, it can be a little bit tricky to pick them up sometimes. I think the Yamagata region, right? The word for dialect is ben in Japanese. Mm. So, for example, Yamagata Prefecture, right? The dialect of Yamagata is Yamagata ben. I never really learned it. I think people look down upon Yamagata Prefecture. It's kind of seen as this poor, backward, rubbish place. Even though, in my opinion, I think it's one of the best prefectures I've been to, but I look down upon it. But I remember, I think the one of the words that came up a lot was mokedano, which means like thank you or kind of like cheers, thanks, mokedano. But like that's an example of one of the words you'd hear from Yamagata, but never anywhere else in Japan. So many different dialects, and I need to learn more. Not that they're that useful, to be honest. One place with a very strong culture, of course, in Japan is Kyoto. And this week, news of the week, it was voted as the best big city in the world. Did that in a very Jeremy Clarkson way. The best big city in the world by international travellers. Now, Tokyo usually wins this award. I think it's won it for like the last 4 years in a row. It's won it for the last 4 years in a row. But now Kyoto has finally come out on top. It's been voted as most popular travel destination for a decade and now the best big city. And it is a big city. I think the population of Tokyo... Actually, no, I'm going to have to look up the Kyoto population. I'm going to say that it's around 28 million. I'm going to have to look that up in a minute. But I guess this doesn't really come as a surprise in many respects. It's always in the top 10 list is Kyoto. I've always wondered, though, what makes a city get shifted around in the list? Why did readers finally decide Kyoto is better than Tokyo? I wonder what kind of made that shift happen. Any ideas?
I don't know, because, I mean, for me, I mean, it's probably the monkey park, isn't it? But I don't know, because it's... Kyoto saw like not, I mean, in the historical section, obviously there's two different parts of it, isn't there? There's the business center, and then there's the place where you go to, you know, pretend you're a shogun warrior or something. I don't know, like old shogun school warrior. Castles and bits and bobs like that. And so it's very different to what modern Kyoto is. So it's an inelegant and inaccurate kind of feeling you get when you stroll around. But I've always just seemed like it was like felt like it was very very touristy. You can't really get around very easily. People are always just trying to sell you stuff, and it wasn't a big thing for me, to be honest. Kyoto,
really? I'm surprised by that. Yeah. I thought you would have loved it. Monkeys and Yokai Street, where we made little models. It wasn't a whole lot. I have a weird relationship with Kyoto. It depends. Every time I go back, I have a different experience, to be honest. And I am going to go down there before the year's out and try and visit it without tourists around and see what it's like. And going back to the point, by the way, it wasn't 28 million. The population is 2.8 million. That was a spectacular error on my part. And I'm very embarrassed by it. Got it mixed up with Kansai, which is 22 million. But
right.
I think, well, Kyoto does have a lot going for it. The history, the culture. There's 100 Michelin-star restaurants alone, I think, in the city. So you're kind of spoilt for choice. But my fondest memories of Kyoto, always on the kind of not-so-touristy, not-so-well-known bits. And I really like the path of the Philosopher's Path. It's quite nice as well. A little kind of pathway that goes around the edge of the city. And obviously it's quite touristy still. There's lots of people down there, but you can still have a bit of time to yourself. And I remember the last time I walked Philosopher's Path, which was May last year, I did it with a Kulish. And I sent you a photo of me walking down there with a Kulish to spite you and make you jealous because I'm a horrible, horrible person.
You are. That is correct. You are.
Yeah,
I like the manga museum. That was good. They had like a manga called what was it bloody called? Two Face or Blackjack? It was called Blackjack, and it was about a pretty racist start to that particular manga. Pretty weird, but maybe not racist, but just a bit off. They'd set up like this big kind of surgeon's room, a big kind of operating theatre, and you could sort of dress up as surgeons, probably pre-COVID. I assume that display isn't there anymore, but you could sort of dress up as a surgeon. And my mate, who works in the NHS, as a civil servant, he's nowhere near the front line of health and social care. He puts that as his WhatsApp picture, and it does my bloody nine.
Oh, good God.
Him dressed in scrubs. Trying to do an operation on me.
Sounds like it. Typical, yeah, God. It'd be good to go to Kyoto, though, before the year's out, and maybe make a video going to unconventional locations, right? There's so many videos on, like, the Kiyomizu-dera Temple, which is really nice. I highly recommend that. The Gingaku-ji Temple and whatnot. It would be kind of fun to go to Kyoto and find these lesser-known spots and a bit like we did, I guess, in some respects. Not the monkey part, but the Yokai Street. Although I feel like we
modern Kyoto
clutching at straws.
And what? I loved Yokai Street.
It was all right. Wasn't really much going on there, though, was there?
No.
Just like some people's run-down shops.
Yeah.
But you did send me an interesting article this week. It's interesting because it's got KFC in it, and anything with KFC in is instantly good. I'm actually, this year, because I'm not going to be going home for Christmas for the first time in a very long time, which I'm quite sad about, I am going to get good old KFC Christmas bucket, and I'm going to try and celebrate it with Natsuki and have like a nice big KFC Christmas menu together. What do you reckon, Pete? Is that a good idea?
Well, it depends if your guts can handle it. I know mine can't, but yeah, it's you're in a situation where do you want me to get into the story? The story about the KFC?
I do indeed. What have we got?
Well, look, it's been said to us a few times, but I'm big into this. Kentucky Fried Chicken, right, have installed in Tokyo and a couple of other cities fried chicken pickup lockers. So you can order online on your app, and instead of waiting in a queue, they give you a code and you go over to the lockers and your KFC is waiting for you in these lockers. And they just look like normal, I guess, two-sided chicken lockers. Normal lockers that you would put your gym kit in or whatever. But they've got clear plastic Perspex screens as the doors. And yeah, your KFC is just waiting for you in there. You just type in the code and open it does. And then you're there, really. But I mean, could you not just, the thing that bothers me is, could you not just reach around and get into the back of it? Because presumably those aren't locked as well.
We're not going to break into KFC chicken lockers, are we? I mean, this is Japan.
No, I guess not. But they've got a little screen that you press. It's like a little LCD screen. It's designed for this specific job, so it's obviously a COVID measure. But I don't know. It just all seems a little bit needlessly fancy.
It's very elaborate, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Is it really necessary? I don't. What? So they you order online basically, and then go and collect it from the KFC pickup box. Is that what it is?
Yeah, you punch in your code, and the locker door just opens, revealing your fried chicken, and it's all through the cashless payment system. So I guess that's why they're doing it. But I just like the fact that, you know, zero waiting time. You just go in, bash open the door, and you're there.
But is it going to be fresh? I mean, that's the main issue, isn't it? You want nice, fresh KFC. If it's
well, it's up to you to approach your locker in decent time. I think that's the way. I think that's the way it's going to work.
Approach the locker in decent time. Well, I mean, yeah, I don't imagine I'll be using it. I do. The only time I actually go to KFC in Japan is at Christmas because it's really expensive here, and I just find it's not as good. They don't have popcorn, chicken, or gravy. But I will do it for Christmas this year because there's no alternative. You can't really find a turkey here. Which is why KFC Christmas started in the first place. But I think it'd be kind of cool. I'm looking forward to doing it. But you've got to get there quick and order it. You have to pre-order the KFC Christmas bucket like a month or two in advance. The last time I did it, many, many years ago, all the best ones were sold out and we were left with like second best secondhand KFC chicken, which was, it was still good, but a little bit disappointing. So it's not cheap either. It's like $80, like 8,000 yen for a bucket of chicken and some microwavable, like, chicken sticks, chicken wings, whatever. It's not overly great, but it's better than nothing, right? Better than nothing, eh?
Did you see also that Royal Horst, obviously a popular chain out there, are now for the first time allowing you to take your leftovers home in a little doggy bag?
I did see that. It's weird. I thought this concept already existed in Japan, to be honest, but apparently it's not that widely known. I mean, I don't really do it anyway. I'm not the sort of person. I tend to eat everything, so I never need to take it home. But I don't know, it's something a bit weird about dragging back half a plate of eaten food, I find. But
for Americans, it's second nature. You paid for that food. You're taking it home. And the Japanese obviously got a big thing about not leaving food on the table and eating all the food and not wasting food. So this could be a pretty good halfway house between that.
That's correct. Yeah, the old motainai culture where you kind of don't waste things. Like if you leave a plate with rice on it, if you go out for dinner or whatnot, or around somebody's house, it could be a little bit a little bit rude and offensive, and yeah, they're pretty good when it comes to waste food around the dinner table in Japan. They've got that kind of element there. But yeah, KFC. I'll let you know how I get on there. Hopefully we can book it. You'll be the first to know. You'll get the good news when we successfully order the KFC Christmas bucket.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania. Too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Join me, Melissa Reddy, and listen to my brand new podcast, Between the Lines. I'll be speaking to the biggest names in football about the captivating, behind-the-scenes stories fans want to hear. From major talking points to untold anecdotes, you'll hear from some of football's leading stars as well as those working in the shadows. In our first episode, I spoke to former Spurs manager Maurizio Pochettino about that Amazon documentary.
We feel responsible because it was very difficult to say yes to open the door to Amazon. Only we watch with Jesus the 25-minute first, because it was until we left the club.
And on our latest episode, I investigate how prevalent and damaging social media abuse is in football.
And I was like taking all this negativity onto myself, and I did. I kind of lost myself and my personality because I knew everything that was going on around it. And it's not until I actually got to a stage where I thought, I can't take this anymore. It is becoming too much for me, that I spoke out about it.
Craving football insight? Well, look no further. Listen to Between the Lines with me, Melissa Reddy, via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
This was a Stakhanov production.
But for now, what have we got in the fax machine this week, Mr. Dawson?
Oh, we got a fax from Victor from Brazil. Hello, Victor. I always love when products bearing the broken English make an appearance in the videos. They're funny by themselves, but the way Chris says it just makes it even more so. A few months ago, a Daiso store opened up in my city. I've been there twice already while in the area. I haven't bought a thing. I just browse through the shelves looking out for some funny English sentences. I might seem crazy to others picking up random products, chuckling a little and putting them back on the shelves. Now, a question for Chris. Do you actually use the products, the English products that you show us, or is it just for the gag? Cheers, lads. Keep up the good work. Chris, are you just a walking joke? Do you just buy stuff just to have a bit of a giggle with?
No. I wear my ridiculous English clothes with pride. For example, the kind of black long sleeve top that I have that has high functionality written on it. I wore that for like half of Journey Across Japan too. I wore it with pride because I wanted people to know. I wanted strangers to know that I do indeed have high functionality. I also took the hat that read something. Oh, I can't remember what it had written on it. Some ridiculous hat. Can't remember. But I do wear hat. That's so many weird clothes, right? But no, I do wear them. I do use them. But for the most part, no, I don't use a lot of them. I did have a weird cat notebook. I think I had in a few videos back that I used. I didn't buy the CD for the band Pizza. Was it Pizza of Death record label I saw the other week?
Yes.
And Barbecue Chicken. I didn't buy that. But I did listen to them on YouTube. I don't know if you saw this, but in the recent Abroad in Japan video, the most recent one, I did stumble across the Barbecue Chickens and go and listen to them on YouTube. They'll be your new favourite band. What do you think, Pete? Barbecue Chickens. Is that a good punk rock band name or what?
I just sort of, it wasn't the record company called like Pizza Boys or something like that?
Pizza of Death Records, no less.
Pizza of Death. Pizza of Death. That's right, yeah. I do like kind of, the I think I've loved a few punk rock bands from Japan in my days, but they do always seem a little bit formulaic. Like, you know, they think that they can't, you know, step outside the usual, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 kind of punk, or even like the NoFX style high standard sort of punk rock as well. So yeah, I've never really got on with Japanese music in general, and certainly Japanese punk rock always. I mean, punk rock in general, and certainly, you know, third wave, fourth wave, not very creative at the best of times, but it is my genre that I love a lot. But yeah, they can be a little bit too formulaic for my liking. But good on them. Good on them for keep on punk rocking, I say.
I mean, I did find, with that video, I did find like tons of really quite bizarre, band names. I'm seeing if I can find some of them now. Because like, that one, Barbecue Chickens, was relatively tame. Here we go. I found a list. So I had a whole section that I had to take out, like a lot of Abroad in Japan videos. I try and keep it under 20 minutes, which means I have to remove entire segments. So I filmed an entire scene where I'm just going through weird band names. And here's like three or four of them. The first one was Garlic Boys. Then there was Asparagus. Then there was Come Back My Daughters. Bit of an eyebrow raiser, that one. And, of course, my personal favourite was just Toast. Toast. And these are all bands, these are all artists under the Pizza of Death record label. Asparagus.
They've got
Garlic
a type.
Boys.
They've got a type, haven't they?
Yeah, there's definitely a theme, isn't there? Food. Apart from Come Back My Daughters. That one, I don't know what's going on there. That one scared me a little bit. But go and check them out. Come Back My Daughters and Asparagus. We got a question from Aya. It says, Dear Chris and Pete, my name is, sorry, Ayaka. I was born in Japan, but I live in Scotland. My question is, having recently seen Chris's opinion on the James May Japan show, I also loved it, it got me wondering, have either of you seen any Japan travel shows from British presenters? I recently watched The Hairy Bikers Asian Adventure, those two English chefs, and loved it. It made me pretty homesick, and I just want to eat all those things up. Thanks, guys. Love the podcast. Ayaka. Who have you seen any of these shows? Who's come over? Was it, what's the name of the other chef guy? Paul something or other.
Oh, I don't know. There's an engineer bloke who's really good at like turning wood and stuff like that. He's gone over to see some he's got quite a nice way about him. And he, you know, spent a day as like an apprentice for a wood turning, like a lathe shop or something. I know it was just metal. He was sort of turning metal and making these precision instruments by hand, this old Japanese guy. And he's basically saying, nobody's doing this anymore. He was like, go on, can I have a go? And he would, and he made this beautifully precise bit of machinery by hand, because it's the only way you can do it pretty much. I'm sure it's probably wider than Mark, but the Japanese love precise engineering. I've also seen a little bit, I think I've seen Joanna Lumley's, but again, Joanna Lumley's was quite good as well. It didn't fall into the kind of the cliquey, it didn't fall into that hole of just doing the same bloody thing all the time, you know, Shibuya Station, all that bollocks. But I think Carl Pilkington's, I thought, was a little disrespectful at times. Again, it was just, you know, go to a sumo wrestling training thing and, you know, cut together with a bit of footage of the Shinkansen, you know, from Getty Images and stuff. It was all pretty basic, wasn't it? One day we should just go out and do the most generic, sumo wrestling day of filming ever.
It's funny, just playing the trailer for Joanna Lumley's Japan. I haven't seen it, but the opening shot of the trailer is the exact stock footage that I got of Shibuya Crossing myself. But credit where it's due to her. The first shot of her walking through Japan, she's in Yamagata as well. So it seems Yamagata getting all the British presenters. So I'm very happy about that. To me, generally, though, I don't watch a lot of travel shows set in Japan because I live here, I guess, so you kind of feel like you don't need to watch any. But yeah, Joanna Lumley, James May, check them out, Ayaka. Hopefully, they're good. Speaking from experience, James May was pretty good, and maybe I'll check out Lumley. Rosanna, do you want to read that one out as I take a sip of my coffee?
All right, then. My name is Rosanna. Hi, Chris and Beat. Thank you for your podcast. My husband and I listen to it religiously as we look forward to visiting Japan again. Excuse me. When the pandemic is over. We also watch Chris's YouTube channel and hope that you see Mount Fuji on your next Abroad in Japan installment. Oh, yeah. I hope to someday cycle across Japan as well, as we love your video series. But first, my husband needs to learn how to ride a bike first, because that may be problematic. For years before our first trip to Japan in 2018, we've had friends tell us about their love for the country. And while it all sounded wonderful, we couldn't understand why these friends would go to Japan every year, or sometimes more than once a year. That all changed when we finally booked our trip to Tokyo, Osaka, and Kyoto, the standard first time in Japan route. We had a great time and promptly booked a trip to Hokkaido and Hiroshima for 2019. Then again, in 2020, we booked a trip to Fukuoka, but unfortunately, this was cancelled due to COVID. Now I understand why Pete and our friends would keep going back to the same country again and again, and I only wish I started going earlier so I would have been able to visit more cities. That is the thing. Everybody who sort of goes, no, why is Peter going out of Japan all the time? Is he going to visit a Japanese family? They've never been to bloody Japan. That's why, because it's bloody great. Chris, in your recent video, I noticed that you had the 642 tiny things to write about book on your bookshelf. I've had the same book for years, but I've yet to crack it open and start writing. Just wondered if you've used the book at all and whether it's helped give you inspiration for videos and future projects. If you ever feel like you're running out of ideas or just hit a mental roadblock for your next video or podcast, what do you do to get past it? Thank you again for the hours of entertainment that you've both provided to your listeners. Best regards, Rosanna.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, isn't there? The first bit there I thought was quite interesting, how Rosanna was a skeptic about Japan. Mm. Certainly, if I'd never moved there, I think if I'd come for just like a week or two, I'd have been like, crap, I want to go back to Japan, as you kind of do, right? And you've been here. How many times do you think you visited Japan now? I always joke and say like 10 or 12 more times than me.
I think the last time was 10. But I mean, they were never like full trips in that I'd go to Korea. I'd sort of waste time. What I should do is do a couple of weeks in Korea, a couple of weeks in Japan, a couple of weeks here, you know, not all in one chunk, but I'm just saying, like, I've been doing like 5 days in Korea and then going over to Japan, 5 days in Taiwan, then going to Japan, 5 days in China, then going to Japan. So, you know, this sounds incredibly salubrious and expensive, but to be honest, it wasn't, and it was a bit of a nightmare to get out there. But yeah, I would say that sort of getting out to Japan in 2 week chunks. I think I've only done that 4 or 5 times. So there we go. It's not that
fair
bad.
Fair amount of times. Yeah. I'm glad you've been able to come back quite a lot. And I think there's definitely, when I try and pitch Tohoku in North Japan to viewers, I always try and sort of say, come on the second trip, because I think realistically most people aren't going to come up here on the first trip. They're going to do the same Tokyo, Osaka, Kyoto, right? And it's on the second trip or even the third trip that things get really kind of exciting and fun. And certainly reading out stories from you guys, that's the kind of vibe that I get, that the trip gets so much better after the first time. It takes like one trip to get used to Japan and try and stop being so culture shocked, really. As for ideas, we're never short of ideas on the podcast because there's so much news going on. And as for videos, I don't turn to the 642 tiny things to write about book as much as I should. The book that Rosanna referenced, it's a little book, and it's just got loads of little writing prompts. It's got like you'll turn a page and it'll say, your friend is a wizard who's dying. Send him your final letter, goodbye. And you have to like think of a letter to write him, or like just these really random, bizarre prompts. And I got the book hoping that the really weird, random stuff within would be of use, but it's not. It's so damn random, it doesn't help. But it's good fun to get some ideas and write some stuff for fun. Got one here from Ichidor. It says, hello, Chris and Pete. I'm Ichidor from Osaka. I've been to the UK 3 times to see my friends who live in Cambridge. The question is, what would you think about Japan in 10 years? Obviously, we're losing our population, and we do need to open up for the immigration or develop a futuristic robot to make industrial workers, make up for the lack of industrial workers. Do you have any idea to help our huge problems from the perspective of a British person living in Japan for 7 years, or a guy who just loves coolish? What ideas do you have? Thank you for the podcast twice a week and keep going. All the best, Ichiro. What do you reckon, Pete? How can we solve all of Japan's problems in the final minutes of the podcast?
Better buses. That's all I've got. Danny, bye.
Get Danny over from Puerto Rico.
Yes. Sort it out.
I don't know. I mean, look, Japan does have a lot of issues. The whole debt thing worries me. I think Japan's got more debt than any other country on earth. It's got to sort that out. And obviously the country's population is aging spectacularly. I can't remember the exact statistics, but it was something like 20%, over 20% of people here are over 65, or it might have been 30%. It was a huge proportion, and that is of great concern because lots of pensions to be paid. I don't think Japan is going to solve these problems with robots. Going back a few years, there were always lots of kind of idealistic little TV shows where they had like, Japan's developed a robot that can carry old people. And they have this big bipedal robot walking with an old person in its arms. But that's not a practical solution. I do think they're going to have to open up the gates to immigration a little bit. How that's going to work, I'm not so sure. But certainly, I remember a few weeks ago, we did talk on this podcast how Tokyo has had more foreign populations risen in terms of foreign immigrants, more than Japanese domestic people moving domestically to Tokyo this year. So that's kind of encouraging, I guess. I think they are kind of opening the doors to immigration. That does need to happen realistically. But I don't know. It's a big topic for another day, Ichiro. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming into abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back in the next few days to all over again, guys. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great few days and we'll see you on Sunday. Is that
Sunday.
Right, Pete?
Sunday? Yes, Sunday. Get it right.
Good old Sunday.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.